Welcome to the Corlin Economics Report, a weekly look at financial and political topics relating to asset-based investing. Guests on this program pay no fees to appear, and guests and hosts disclose any equity interest in companies profiled. Now, the Corlin Economics Report.
Hey everyone, welcome in to the weekend edition of the KE Report. Corey and Chad here, your host for this weekend's edition. Also, your host throughout the week on our website, kereport.com, and podcast, The KE Report. You can also check out our updated YouTube page where we are starting to post select interviews in video format on that page. So please give some love over to our YouTube page as well. On this weekend show, there's a lot for us to talk about in terms of market moves and how a lot of different sectors closed what was a pretty good month of November. But we're going to start off with a big focus on the precious metals to kick off this show, and then also on the back end to kick off this show, we are chatting with Dana Lyons, fund manager based out of Chicago, also editor of the Lion's Share Pro website. Now, Dana, as I said, let's start off with precious metals, gold in particular. I know you follow GLD, and we just had the highest monthly close ever for the gold price, which correlated into the highest monthly close for GLD. That is after a strong month of October and a fairly strong month of November. Dana, where does gold go from here?
Right. Thanks, Corey. Well, as you know, we've been talking about gold and the longer term potential for gold for a while, especially given the constructive chart pattern that we've had. The original high back in 2011 kind of hit the same high in 2020 post-COVID and have kind of been working off or consolidating that move ever since. We had a spike last year, another spike early this year, but pretty much sideways for the last 2-3 years. So that's constructive action. It's constructive that we didn't completely lose that whole gain that we saw from the low end of 2015, 2016, but also constructive that we've kind of moved sideways and within arm's length of the all-time highs. So kind of worked off that froth that was built up post COVID during that high. Now we've stored enough energy so that when we do break out, and I think we do break out, I don't know when exactly, but I think we do break out, and we've got enough energy to make that breakout a sustainable one, make it put in a new, healthy, longer term up leg in the gold market. So I think that is around the corner. When exactly, like I said, I don't know, but we've maintained a pretty healthy allocation to gold, especially, and also somewhat silver and the miners as well. Like we talked about a month ago or so, we did remove all of our hedges in the miners. So we are pretty hopeful and somewhat constructive there. We've seen obviously some good developments on the miners front this week. We just need to build on that. That we're certainly not out of the woods yet. There's a fair amount of chart resistance above, but some positive developments there for sure this week.
Well, Dana, it is encouraging to see, like as Corey mentioned, the highest monthly close of all time. And today it looks like we're going to have the highest weekly close of all time on the futures contract. But when you look at silver, gold's scrappy little brother, it's a little bit different picture. It's a different chart. It's not approaching new all-time highs. It's been stuck in a range. And really the mining stocks that you alluded to tend to track silver a little closer than gold anyways. Gold is seen as the monetary metal and silver is kind of a dual purpose, more speculative metal. So what's your read technically on the silver market?
Absolutely. I think you pretty much nailed it right on the head. But we do have, I think silver does move in concert with gold if we do break out in the gold market and put that new bull market up leg. I think silver goes along to some extent with that, as well as the miners. But again, the chart pattern is a little bit different for sure. Silver, we trade SLV. So definitely have some work to be done here around that 23.5 to 24 level. If we get through that decisively, then we're looking at the 2020, 2021 highs up around 28. So that should come into play pretty quickly. It's not just a pure precious metals play. There's economic component to it. So it's not the same thing, but I do think it moves in tandem, at least trends in the same direction as gold. Same thing with the miners. And like I mentioned, we have seen some positive technical developments in the miners, GDX, GDXJ, as well as silver and junior silver miners. I think that opens up at least some breathing room right now, whereas they were looking dicey for a while. But like I mentioned, we did remove our hedges. I think the benefit of the doubt is back up to the upside. So especially on a breakout in gold, that should still obviously, while there's a little bit of a divergence between and in the longer term picture between the miners and gold itself, breakout gold should obviously lift gold miners and the junior miners to a significant extent. And they've been beaten down so much that even a move up towards, you know, the highs from a couple of years ago would signify a substantial move there. So I would definitely be accumulating more and more into pullbacks.
So Dana, just a little bit more on GDX. One thing that was encouraging to me, at least this week, was higher volume that came into a number of the larger miners. But as you said, you take a look at a long-term chart or a longer-term chart, multi-year chart, there's still a lot of work to do on the upside, which is very different than where gold is, pretty much right at all-time highs. When you're looking at these different levels that, let's say, GDX has worked its way lower on, how do you view each level? Is each level a key stepping stone, or do you really go back to those 2020 highs and say it needs to get there, and then we reassess the strength and how quickly it got there?
The 2020 highs would obviously be nice to see, but there are stepping stones along the way, like you mentioned. I don't think it's going to be a straight shot there. So we have moved above some key moving averages, some key retracement levels this week, which especially on the technical and algorithmic trading models, that removes some of the roadblocks to higher prices. So it's going to be easier from now on to start moving higher and moving higher quickly. But I would say as far as levels in GDX, we do have a couple roadblocks still ahead before we would maybe make a jump to those 2020 highs. So I'd be looking at around the 30, just over 32, which we're close to it. And then probably the bigger level would be up around that 36.5 level where we stopped earlier this year. It also marks a 61 retracement from the 2020 highs. But if gold does break out, I don't see any reason why the miners can't make a run at those highs from back in the post-COVID era.
Well, Dana, I appreciate you breaking down the precious metal sector for our audience. And one of the prime movers that affects the precious metal sector is interest rates. I know you like to look at each asset class on its own with its own unique setup quantitatively and technically, but interest rates play a big part in all the markets. We've seen a big pullback in rates. You know, if you look at where the 10-year is today, at the time of this recording, it's at 4.26. We were just talking about it getting over 5% not too long ago. The 2-year has pulled back to 4.6, let's say. What's your take on the interest rate environment and conversely how the bond market is getting a bid lately?
First, the typical caveat, we are very bearish on bonds in the longer term. We think that long 60-year cycle did bottom in yields around COVID back in 2020. So I think we do go up for many years or several decades to come. But again, it's not going to be a straight shot. The breakout above 4% was significant. We've been looking at that as a very key level, just above 4% in terms of retracement from the highs back in the early 80s. So if we can hold this breakout, that opens up substantial more upside. Obviously, long term, we think it goes much higher. But if we hold that breakout above 4%, I think the next big target to the upside would be up around the mid 6% level, around 6.5%. But we are pulling back sharply right now in yields, like you mentioned. So we're gearing up for a probably one of the more significant developments in the financial markets, probably forthcoming, which would be a test of that breakout level, which was around that 4% level. So that appears to be approaching. What happens there will be very significant. We do look at markets on their own merit and largely in a vacuum. But obviously, what happens to yields, to bond yields, especially on the test of that 4% level, will have certainly rippling effects into other markets. So again, we test and hold that 4%-ish level, then we've got upside probably up into that 6% plus range. If we do break down below 4%, then we've got a false breakout on the charts for now. That would open downside to those lows from this year around 3.25%, and then potentially even down into that sub 3% range. So that's going to be a development that we're going to be monitoring closely. Right now, we are long bonds. We'll probably sell all of our long allocation on a test around that 4%-ish range, and then watch the action from there and see what happens.
All right, Dana, let's also move over to U.S. markets, because I think yields going lower, the dollar going lower, has put a bid in a lot of different areas. Look at the S&P. The S&P was up practically 9% just last month. A lot put in at the early part of the month. But broadly, as you're viewing these U.S. markets, do you see the potential for these to continue to run higher? And who knows, maybe even reach some all-time highs?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, at least in the large cap segment of the market and various sectors like tech, we're already seeing some all-time highs in semiconductors, select segments within the technology space. Certainly the mega cap space, I would expect to see new all-time highs. S&P 500, I would expect to see probably new all-time highs eventually. We're testing right now basically the highs from the summer. We break those, then I don't see anything stopping us from moving right up to all-time highs. The difference, I should say, the other side of the coin would be how sustainable such a breakout to all-time highs would be, which in our view would be kind of tenuous, especially given the divergence within the broader market. So you look at something like the Value Line Composite, which tracks the median stock in the market. And even as the S&P or some of the major averages are teasing all-time highs, you've got the median stock in the market is still down about 20% below its all-time highs hit back in early 2022 or just before that. So we do have major divergence in the chart between the mega caps and the broad market, which generally and historically speaking, those divergences always resolve in the direction of the broader market. So doesn't mean the large caps can't go to new highs, like I said, and we expect them to, and we expect them to not stop immediately. It should be a good run into new all-time high ground. But like I said, I don't expect it to be a sustainable move unless the broader market and the small caps do make a substantial catch up and also make a run at all-time highs themselves. But like I mentioned, they're a long way from that right now. Today, as we speak, the small caps are making a near-term called a micro breakout of sorts, which does open up further upside in the near term, as well as you throw in the January effect, which is the tendency for small caps to underperform this time of year. We can make a nice run here in the near term, the small caps in the broader market. But again, it would take a lot for them to get anywhere near all-time highs. So I would say focus right now. We can see a comeback in the small caps, but continue to focus on that longer term relative strength, the tech and the large caps, where you have a little bit more margin of error in terms of your allocation, considering there's not much, if any, technical resistance above.
Yeah, Dane, I think that's such an interesting point, because often the indexes that have the mega cap tech stocks leading the charge can paint a much different picture than the overall market breadth and where the overall market is. And it's still nowhere close to its all-time highs, as you pointed out. And we get this debate a lot. There's a lot of people that say either the small caps and the rest of the market breadth will catch up, or the mega caps will catch down. It sounds like in what you just stated that you're expecting it more as things play out into next year for the larger caps to maybe catch down to the rest of the market. Is that the way you're viewing things, and that maybe people need to curb their enthusiasm a little bit, even if the index has hit a new high, because you're not seeing in your models that same kind of action in the rest of the market.
Yeah, it's really a, I call it a durational aspect to the perspective, which only means there's going to be opportunities on different time frames. Okay, right now, our models are pointed higher. The market data is constructive for the most part, despite the fact that we're seeing the broader market, the small caps, well below their all-time highs. Doesn't mean they can't rally significantly here and play some sort of a catch-up in the near term to that larger cap strength. Whereas in the longer term, like I mentioned, a breakout in the large cap averages because of the lack of longer term support and participation in the broad market. Such a breakout, while it could trigger a nice run in the intermediate term, it might not be sustainable in the longer term, and that might lead to longer term downside. So from a durational standpoint, yes, there might be catch up by the broad market and the small caps in the near term, followed eventually by that catch down in the mega caps, because you know you can't have a sustainable rally on the heels of only a handful of stocks. You know, the ultimate example of that was back in 98 to 2000 when we had the dot-com bubble that was led by only a handful of stocks. The entire gain in 99 was due to like five stocks, and that eventually imploded. The same kind of thing can happen now, but it doesn't mean you can't have significant potential opportunity on the upside in the interim. So that's what we're positioned for. We'll continue, as always, to monitor developments in the market data and switch posture if we have to. But right now, we're looking further upside and maybe some catch up in that broad market. But it would take, you know, substantially positive developments in the smaller cap and that broad market to change our longer term pessimistic perspective on the overall market.
Okay, that's interesting, Dan. And I want to almost stick here for another second because, look, everything seems to be moving higher. We are moving into the end of the year, but there has been this almost, I guess, risk on move. But as you said, it is in some select stocks and some select other areas, but most things have bounced. After what felt like a breakdown about a month and a half to 2 months ago, but you're not necessarily buying this. This could be kind of a sugar high rally before a much bigger crash or pullback. Do you compare it at all to at least going back to the pandemic crash? Because people are saying we need a crash, but then there's another audience that is saying we already had a crash just 3 years ago. So we're past that stage. How do you balance that all out?
Yeah, so I wouldn't. There are variations in extremes, and a lot of it comes down to sentiment. You know, the quote unquote breakdown we talked about that happened about called a month and a half ago. That happened, as we spoke about at the time, when sentiment was pretty pessimistic. So the elements were there for a reversal higher in the market because finally, after being too frothy, being too bullish at the end of July, investors had gotten fairly pessimistic and fairly hedged to a significant degree. So they were cushioned against any sort of a breakdown. So saw that breakdown, reversed immediately, and the sentiment picture was constructive enough that could generate the type of bounce that we're seeing now. On the flip side, once you get that sugar high like you're talking about, and investors get too bullish, sentiment gets too frothy, there's no one left to buy, then you're at risk of type of a top that we saw, either a short-term top that we saw in July or that major type of a top that we saw back in 2000, the dot-com bubble. I don't think we're at either of those levels right now. I think just coming off of those pessimistic levels at the end of October, I think that a lot of that initial move was short covering. I think people, because of that, because they finally got hedged at the wrong time, they missed a lot of this move. So I think there's plenty of room for sentiment to improve, I think, from here. And that could fuel further rally here in the near term to intermediate term. So I don't think we're frothy or overly bullish yet sentiment wise, which could open the door to further upside. And I definitely don't think we're in the short to intermediate term sentiment indicators. We're nowhere near those levels that we saw in like 2000 or 2007, you know, where investors were just like through the roof, you know, giddy. On the flip side, if you look at some of the background, what we call background indicators, and this is like the long-term bigger picture, and one of the reasons that we are so pessimistic for the longer term, if you look at the amount of, and these are very slow-moving indicators, if you look at, for example, the amount of equity allocation that households have, it's still just off of all-time highs that we saw earlier this year. You look at valuations. Yeah, they've come down a bit, but they're still like historically high. Things like that, valuations like that, long-term indications like that are still historically high or just off of record levels. So again, coming down to the durational aspect, doesn't mean you can't continue to rally here in the intermediate term, which I think we do. But longer term, there is just historic amount of correction that needs to take place at some point that's unsustainable, that again feeds into one of the reasons why we are not so optimistic on the longer term outlook for the for U.S. equities.
All right, Dana, thank you very much for this outlook on the metals, on interest rates, and on the broad markets. We're ending the year, it seems like, on a positive note. There is still another month to go, but next year, boy, oh boy, I know there's still a lot of questions in people's heads, and who knows where they go. Who knows if we do hit those all-time highs and then pull back. But so far, at least after that breakdown a couple months ago, everything seems to have rebounded, or at least most everything seems to have rebounded fairly strongly. Dana, thank you very much for your time. We'll chat again in another couple weeks. I hope you have a great rest of your week.
All right, sounds good. Thanks, guys.
Al Corlin's firm, A.B. Corlin & Associates Incorporated, provides consulting services to public companies on matters of regulatory compliance. To find out more, follow the link from www.kereport.com. The Corlin Economics Report will be back after this brief timeout.